Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
And welcome to the greatest show on earth.
Lads, dads, and a couple of beers. Big Al and Dave chatting to a couple of peers. Covering the topics that you're gonna wanna hear. Making you laugh your ass off while holding back the tears. Crazy stories, celebrity guests. Come and take a minute to relieve some stress. Regardless of your background, religion, or wealth, the most important conversation is about mental health.
Sponsored by Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Lads, Dads, and a Couple of Bloody Beers.
How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm quite excited about today.
I am. I am. But
I don't want to sort of say who the guest is yet. So we need.
Nor
to
do
have,
I.
We need to have a chat. But I'm quite excited about this one.
I am quite excited. But first of all, I need to start off with a little bit of an announcement. Everyone has seen the post that I put out about a week ago. I've not been feeling myself the last couple of months, and obviously it's shown with the episodes we've put out. It is really selfish of me, the fact that I've not, we preach mental health on here, but I've not took care of my own in the slightest, and I've masked it very well up to a point. This weekend I took a real strip back and sorted myself out. So I appreciate everyone's messages for reaching out to me, but I'm in a good place now. And me and David had a really good chat about the podcast, and it was looking like we were going to pull it. But we've decided to really finish strong. We'll take a couple of months off for the summer, maybe less. And we're going to strip the podcast back in series four and bring you some guests that are going to be more relatable, I think. Not that the guests that we've had on haven't been, but we're going to really get back to focusing on mental health and the state of mental health within the world, but also still keeping our identity of the podcast that we like to have a good laugh. So yeah, for me, I apologize to everyone, and we are back.
Well, like I've said many times, mate, don't need to apologize. Everybody's human. I won't echo what you said, but we put ourselves under tremendous pressure to make sure we've got guests and things like that. And I don't think that's healthy for either of us. So I think, but enough said, move on, turn the page, walk away.
So let's get back to the old school. What are you drinking?
Oh, I didn't even think you was going to do this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because we've just had a chat about something that I'm drinking. So everybody out there, I don't drink beers anymore.
What? Where did that come from?
So I haven't drunk for a very long time, which you have known about ever since I did this kind of cleanse. But I'll still occasionally drink Guinness with you and stuff like that. But
I didn't know you were going to this then.
I don't drink beer anymore.
You look like you have lost a bit of weight, I must admit.
Yeah, I'm about a stone, I'm just under a stone and a half lighter. Because it just bloats me, it makes me feel really rubbish.
Yeah, and it does. And there's a lot of shit in beer.
I do like sometimes.
Name the podcast.
Lads, dads, and a couple of and one stiff neck that don't drink beer, maybe. but basically, it don't make me feel great. It bloats me out. I do get quite jealous when I see other people, especially you, posting about all the beers you're having over the weekends. But I'd have it, and then I just regret that I'd had it. Do you know what I mean?
So I think it's moderation, though, isn't it? I mean,
I like going out and having Guinness, and like spending a whole day drinking Guinness with you. But that's what I like. So when I'm just having a drink now at home, I might just very rarely have a glass of red wine, just a little glass of red wine. Or obviously, I still have my love for whiskies and bourbons. So I'm having that, but I'm not trying not to have Coke at the moment. So I'm having like a ginger ale or a light ginger ale.
It's
but
weird.
In answer to your question,
go on.
I am drinking a fantastic little number that I've had bought over from the States. And it is a banana-flavoured bourbon called Howlerhead, which is made by a bloke called Dana White, who owns the UFC.
Oh, yeah.
It is unbelievable, Jeff.
It does look good.
It's really banana-y. It's got a right sexy bottle. It's just really nice. So I'm about a third of a way through that bottle, and I've had it for about a month.
Well, there you go.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking, funny enough, I'm drinking whiskey. I'm drinking Screwball peanut butter bourbon whiskey. Now, again, it's an import from America, and I'm told that it's the baseball star Derek Jeter's ones, but I haven't made it yet, so I'm going to make it now.
Oh,
excuse me.
Is it really peanut buttery?
Oh, Jesus Christ, it is. Go on, smell that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've got to say, mate, I can't believe how banana-y this one is. So,
yeah,
it's actually quite nice. It'd probably be quite decent with a Coke. I don't think my banana one would be good with a Coke because I think you'd lose the banana.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So, just a banana.
I've got it with ginger ale.
We've all done that in a night, haven't we?
I've got it with ginger ale, but I've also had it just with soda.
All right.
Which is nice.
All right, I'm going for a taste test. Hold on.
Go on, Sean. No spitting it out.
Oh, God.
What, not good?
I need another one. Hold on.
Maybe it was the peanut butter shock. Oh, don't do that, you rank bastard.
It's like the Guinness.
You need to try it with.
Disgusting.
You need to try it with some like soda water or some ginger ale. No Coke. Maybe it's a Coke.
Anyway, let's move on. I'll tell you one thing I want to talk about.
Hang on a minute.
Oh, I've got my birthday present.
I gave you a birthday present days ago. Here. You've held on to this birthday present. So again, I bought him this birthday present because his birthday was at the end of May. And I haven't seen him because he's been so busy. So he said that he would hold on to it and open it on the podcast. So I got the wife to give it to him on Monday.
Yes, she did.
So
matron.
Yeah, and the present as well.
Oh, I can see bowl cut garms. Oh, look at that. It's only Deirdre Barlow. I've only got myself a Deirdre Barlow t-shirt. Look at that.
God rest but it's not life. It's not Deirdre, is it? It's Deirdre Barlow.
Shout out to Bowl Cut Garms. I reckon we're going to try and get them as a sponsor on the next pod series.
Bowl Cut Garms, for anybody that don't know, they do wicked t-shirts. They're so good, so funny.
Thank you, mate. That's lovely.
Oh, you're more than welcome, pal. I know that how you have a love for Deirdre. So, yeah, made perfect sense. Happy birthday.
Thank you. So,
go on then. What are we talking about?
Two things I want to talk about. Dogs and how picky they can be. So, I've had to take the dog to the vets. And everyone knows taking the dog to the vets. That's a real ball ache. Yeah. Now, they said to me, we're going to give us some medication. I remember when I had my dog when I was younger, it's really hard to get him the medication.
Yeah.
So, they give them in little pill forms now, don't they? And they try and make them...
Meaty
flavours. Mm. And I was like, I just can't believe my dog, who literally would eat cat shit given any opportunity, would try and hide a fucking pill with 3 pounds of cheese, suddenly she's Gordon Ramsay. Like, I don't understand it. It makes no sense.
Oh, dear. What's the matter with her?
Oh, no, it's just like the worming stuff, because she's still a pup, isn't
right.
She?
All right. Okay.
But I don't get that. The other thing I want to talk about quickly. Remember Rainbow?
Jeffrey, Bungle and George.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did Bungle wear pajamas to bed but walk around nude all day? It makes no fucking sense.
I used to be able to do an impression of Zippy as well when I was little.
I could do a good
done
George.
That for ages. Go on in.
Hello, Zippy. I'm going to the toilet.
Well, you go to the toilet.
Okay.
Have you seen that clip on social media where it's full of the innuendos and it's Rainbow?
Yeah, well, they did one for Comic Relief, didn't they, years ago?
Oh, did they?
And it's that word of Bungle. Well, I can't get it in, Jeffrey. Well, you made it last night, Bungle. Well, Jeffrey, if you drop one, well, I got it in, and he walks out smashing that thing. Yeah. And now we're going to talk about Bungle's twanger.
Well, I've got the big red one.
What made you think about that, anyway?
Well, I was watching, again, a comedy on, YouTube and that. I was doing a bit of research for one of these roles I've got in these films.
Yeah.
And I'm not playing the part of the
I was
bit.
About to say, is it the remake of Rainbow?
Oh, God, that'd be amazing. No, and I just sort of ended up stumbling across Rod, Jane and Freddie.
Yeah.
Who were part of Rainbow. And I started just rewatching Rainbow.
They were the humans, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember Jane being pretty boom-tang back in the day when I was
She was peng.
Jane, yeah.
Something else I want to quickly discuss with you.
Go on in.
Double texting. Are you a double texter?
You mean where you say one thing and you say another thing straight away?
No, no. I mean, you send someone a message and they don't reply within a time frame which you seem to, you deem it as like, you should have got back to me. So you send another one or a question mark. It's the question mark.
No, I'm not a double texter then. I do dwell on it. I think we all dwell on it, don't we? So like if someone doesn't reply to you straight away, then you think, oh, fucking hell, what's going on? Like they're normally always on their phone. I know that you feel that about me and about other people sometimes, but I think we're all a bit like that. Mm. Especially if the conversation is backwards and forwards, and then it suddenly stops.
Yeah.
It's the old Charlotte left the chat room scenario from In Between Us, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes. Back and forth.
Back and forth, back and forth. They just went.
Yeah.
Birthday, come for dinner. Question mark. But no, I know what you mean. It's a bit of a weird one, but I suppose if you're not at the other end of that phone, you can't see what really is going on. And your mind plays horrible, horrible tricks on you.
Yeah.
The human brain has actually got an awful lot to answer for, isn't it, mate? When you actually scrape it back and you look at all mental health and anxiety and depression and everything like that, it is as simple as it is. Your brain plays horrible, horrible tricks on you. It makes you think horrible, horrible thoughts. But no, I'm not a double texter. I know certain people that are. What's the acceptable space between a text?
Like allowing for a response?
So I text you, how are you? What are you doing? Fancy a beer tonight?
Right.
You don't respond. We're talking 20 minutes, half an hour, 5 hours, a day, a week.
What time have you text me?
6 o'clock in the morning when I'm up and I know that you're up.
Oh.
Mm.
I think by 10:30, if you've not heard back.
Something's cooking.
Yeah. So you know that's a no-go. But again, you're one of these
but
people.
But you do always think of the negative when something's cooking.
Yeah, but you are one of these people where, and you've admitted to it in the past, where I'll say, I follow it up with a double text, and I say, why have you not responded? And you'll say, because I wanted to find out first. Instead of just texting back going, I don't know, I'll let you know. Mm. You'd rather wait until you've got an answer to come back and go, yeah, no,
that is true.
And that I find that weird.
Because I think that if I message you and go, let me know, it's all in limbo. And then what if I forget to let you know?
If you forget to let me know, then that says to me that you're not that bothered about it. Let's say the scenario is going for a beer tonight.
No, see, I might do all of the homework side of it. So I might ask the boss, being the wife, and say, where are you, what are you doing, and everything like that. But then I might just forget to finish it off with you.
Right.
But whereas I say, I'll let you know, the prompt to that is that I go to Kelly and ask her, what, can I go out to play tonight with my friends? She says yes, and then I text you back.
Right, I'm with you. Interesting.
People have said before that I'm not very good at replying back to them on text message. And I don't know if that's some kind of subconscious that I have about text message. I adamantly try. I'm really like try and respond straight away now. But I also think that if I'm running around in a warehouse, let's say, for anybody out there that doesn't know what I do, I run around in different warehouses. I don't always have the time to respond. So, warehouse cleaner. I don't always have the time to respond. So I might read a text, but then completely forget that I've read a text. And I'm very aware that if you've got your read receipts on, I get the old double tick and then I'm fucked because you go, well, you read it and you didn't respond.
Yeah, see,
there's loads of like conversation pressures then as well.
Yeah, that is another interesting thing. Entering the conversation pressure, that's why I turn mine off. I have all my.
I don't think I even know how to do that.
Yeah, no, I have all mine off.
Can't be dealing with it. Again, mate, it is one of those things that you instantly go to the negs. You instantly go to the negative when someone doesn't respond. Someone might have some shit going on.
Yeah.
And actually, to be fair, someone might have some proper shit going on. People like who we just spoke about before we started recording got proper shit going on where a beer is the last thing on their mind or responded to a text message is the last thing on their mind. And we instantly go to that dark place because our brain is a horrible shit of a object, isn't it?
Well, I totally agree. So it's a question that I've always wanted to speak to you about on the podcast, but we've never really got around to it.
Oh, go on then.
What is a conspiracy theory that you believe in?
Conspiracy theory that believe in.
For example, like the flat earth conspiracy, the 9/11 conspiracy. Basically, following on from Don Jolly, I looked into conspiracy theories. And obviously, the conversations we had with him, who let's face it, Dom's of the opinion that all conspiracy theories are just wackos in their bedrooms making it up. But I don't know. Like, I look into the moon landing for one, things like that. I always think,
I don't know, mate.
There's no smoke about fires.
I don't know.
Have you heard about the Milton Keynes conspiracy?
What about it?
That it's owned and designed and made by the Freemasons.
I mean, no, I hadn't heard that. I mean, it's probably plausible. I know that it's Bletchley, because my uncle used to live in Bletchley, which is a principality of Milton Keynes, and that's where the Codebreakers were based in the war. I don't believe the alien thing. I don't believe the flat earth thing. I don't believe the 9/11 thing. I don't know. I watched loads about 9/11.
You don't think about it.
And I just don't think it is. I just think it is what it is. I mean, I've been to New York. I've seen Ground Zero. I've flown in a helicopter around New York as well. And I just think it is what it is. I don't think it was a conspiracy theory. I don't think it was fake. I don't think any of that. I don't know, mate. I'm quite a simple soul. And I just don't, like Loch Ness Monster, I don't believe in that.
Oh, you don't believe in anything. It's boring.
I'm trying to rapidly think of ones. There might be ones that I believe in. I've just...
You believe in ghosts?
Oh. That's a good one.
Because you've told me you believe in ghosts, Stace. You can't now say you don't.
What do I believe in ghosts? So I believe...
Do you not believe the stories that we've had on the podcast where I was bummed by the ghost of Michael Jackson?
I like the idea that there's something after death.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I like the idea of you being bummed by the ghost of Michael. I like the idea of that there's something after death, but I also think if it was real, somebody would have caught it by now. And like, it would be commonly known ghosts exist, and there'll be real footage that you can find all over the place. And one of the things that throws out everything that there is that there is ever to do with ghosts, right, is why are they always old people in Victorian clothing as ghosts? People have died since then. Why do they not wear modern clothes? Why do they not?
Well, yeah.
Why is it always a white woman? Why is it not a ginger man? Like, yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Why is it not an 18-year-old teenager slut dropping in the kitchen?
Yeah, with a spliffy T-shirt on and Alessi trainers. Come on, man. Like, smoking one of them's died. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's things like that that just make it quite hard to believe. Now, I always get this the wrong way round. Am I an atheist if I don't believe in religion?
Yes. No, yeah, you're an atheist if you don't believe in God. I think it's agnostic. Yeah, what's that one?
I don't know. But either way, I don't believe in God and I don't believe in religion. And
about the Illuminati?
No, I'm not a fan. I rode that when it opened at Alton Towers and I didn't think it was very good.
The what? Illuminati?
No, I was joking. Yeah, I don't believe in any of that. I was a Freemason.
Were you?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Oh, that all makes sense now. That's why you don't believe in them. You're part of them. Was you actually?
Yeah, for about 3.5 years.
Oh, I never knew that.
I'm a master mason. I can do all the handshakes and everything, mate.
What? No, you're lying to me, David.
I'm not lying. I don't like this.
I don't like the fact that I've known you practically since I was a kid.
I tell you what. Next time I see you, I'll get my case out of the loft.
Oh, you're freaking me out.
I know all the words and everything, Keys.
I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Where did you stop?
This
is a revelation, this is.
It's a big financial
conspiracy.
Investment to be part of the Masons. I got to the level of Master Mason. I didn't want to go any further with my Masonic path. So I decided to leave. Isn't it all like,
is it like, I always thought,
go on,
things are like there's some sort of satanic connection.
No. So it's not a secret society. It's not a secret society. It's a society that has secrets. And one of the downfalls.
So it's a secret society.
No, it's not, because you can find out about everything to do with Freemasons and Masonic behavior. It's one of the downfalls of having the internet, that you could find out what the rituals were, what the sayings were, what the speech was, and everything like that. You can find all of that out if you want to. But yeah, so I was part of the Waltham Abbey sector. Right. And I got invited to join. So you either get born into Masonry, so if your father's a Mason, or you have to be invited to join.
Right, how did you get into it then?
I got invited to join by a friend of mine who was a Mason.
Who's that?
A gentleman called Dave Pullen, okay, who I used to work with. He was quite respected in the world of Masonry. So yeah, he asked me to join, and yeah. So every Tuesday night I used to go to practice and practice all the speeches, all the sayings and everything like that. And then once a month you would have a meeting, and at that meeting you'd have normally like a 7-course meal, loads of drink, and there'd be some kind of ritual or some kind of show going on. So somebody might be being introduced to Masonry, somebody might be going to level up. Your face, you're like,
because I we'll have to do another episode on this, because I've watched so many documentaries about the weird rituals and conspiracies based around Freemasons.
The wording is really strange.
I know some, well, exactly, and that's where things come into interpretation, especially with things like the Bible, and that's why we have Christian fundamentalism and stuff like that. You know, people want to talk about Islamic fundamentalists and what the problem they do in the world. Also, people do it with Christian fundamentalism just because they're not, I'm going off on tangent here, but not just because they're of a Eastern Europe, a Middle Eastern descent, they're a problem. But
well, Masons built the pyramids.
Well, and conspiracies around that as well. Jesus Christ, there's so many conversations to add. They're basically weird. They're weird. The wording is weird.
Kelly was really scared when I said I was going to join it, because she had the understanding that they were a bit of an Illuminati, like you said, but they're not. They're just normal people. There's a lot of different sectors that treat Masonic history differently. So the one that I joined was very historical. So your words and your speech had to be spot on, as if it was written in the book. A lot of them aren't like that anymore. Masonry in
why
a whole
did you
is
leave?
Because it cost a lot of money, and I had a little family, and it was taking up a lot of my time.
So this was like, what year are we talking?
So I left the Masons in 2014. Yeah, when we lived below.
Basically,
you.
What I call the prime of our friendship, like when we used to do
quite a lot. Yeah.
You had a secret life as a Freemason.
Yeah. But I don't know how to interpret this. That sounds terrible, but I left in 2014.
That's not like...
There is, well, because people look at it really different now. So some people are really anti-Masons, but I can promise you there's nothing in there that needs to be worried about.
I think you need to dig a little bit deeper, and I will dig a little deeper. Now, we said before that we're not drinking beer anymore, so I'm changing the podcast. Lads, Dads, and a Couple of Conspiracies.
Lads, Dads, and a Freemason.
Ex-Freemason.
I can go back whenever I want.
Well, I'm just shocked.
I'll show you everything, mate. I don't mind showing. You can find it all out now if people want to, but there's a couple of
what's the handshake.
There's a few different handshakes depending on what level,
like,
you're at.
What are we talking, like you would, like,
it's not like fucking house party, mate, where you're like
it's just creepy. Anyway, let's get this done, because I'm just weirded out.
Right, let's talk about the guest then. So this is quite fangirly, I think, for both of us. It's a massive honour to have this person on. He was a huge part of, I wouldn't say growing up because we were already past that age.
But teenage days.
Teenage days, early 20s, lad era, football. He is an icon when it comes to talking about football and English Premier League, Championship, Conference, everything like that. I remember so many times, Al, waking up to this guy and Helen Chamberlain on a Saturday morning and just being in fits of laughter. It was the programme to watch. Well, it still is the programme to watch. I'm not going to do it the injustice that it doesn't deserve. But with him and Helen at the helm for, I think it was 11 years, you did not miss a week.
No. And you loved it.
I loved every single minute of it. And I'm not saying that I don't love what he does now, but I have such nostalgia for when he was on Soccer AM on Sky Sports 1 and Sky 1 for years. It was just, it was brilliant. So look, I'll let you do the honours, pal.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast, TV royalty, the iconic Mr. Tim Lovejoy. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. I like being called royalty. That's kind of good. Where am I in a royal family setup? Am I the king or am I a prince? Am I a queen?
You'd definitely princess. Be the naughty prince, Tim. Definitely.
Yeah. No, I like to see myself as king of TV. King Tim.
Oh, we'll go with that then. King of TV.
Yeah.
So look, for anybody that doesn't know you, Tim, let's talk about your history. What makes you famous? Obviously, we've had a little chat before we've hit record and you're aware that me and Al are fans. So let's talk about you and what makes you famous.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I suppose Soccer AM is the one that everyone always talks about. I did 11 years of that from 96, the glory years glory years for many of us, actually, the 90s, weren't they? And just such a great time that was. I did 11 years and then moved on to Something for the Weekend. Did a bit of that. Then BBC decided that they weren't interested in the show anymore. Well, not really. I can go into more detail if you want, but picked up by Channel 4. I was also doing 5 Live and XFM. So I've been doing a bit of radio as well. So yeah, I've been around a bit.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I mean, I've checked out your rap sheet. So I tend to dig a little deeper with our guest, Tim. And
your work rap sheet, that is. Not
your work rap sheet, yeah. Not a criminal rap sheet. Yeah. That was harder for me to get hold of. I'm still waiting for that guy from Croydon to come back to me, but apparently he can get access to it. Now, you go back a lot further than that. I was really interested about the Blue Peter.
That was a weird one. I just decided one day, I was like growing up, and I had Sean Keighley on my podcast, and what was it? I've got to think of the expression. Inspiration comes from desperation. I wasn't brilliant at school, if I'm honest with you.
Okay, nor was I. That's fair.
Kind of left at 16-ish, and then went to college. Didn't bother doing anything, and so got lobbed out. And then I sort of ended up just working in clothes shops. And then I did a bit of decided that that was crap. So I thought I'd go and work in finance. You know, the big dollars of the city. That's what we were all thinking about. Let me turn my emails off, otherwise they'll keep doing that noise. And then I decided that, you know, this was never going to work. So I decided that I'm going to have to get involved in something else, and sort of decided to start working in TV. And, you know, I managed to get myself an agent, God knows how, and I managed to get an audition for Blue Peter. And, you know, it's one of those things that, like, way further down in my career, Blue Peter asked me to come on and be a presenter for a charity. One of their presenters was away, and they said, come and do it. It's a charity week or something, sport relief or something like that. So I went and did it, and they dug out my audition, and it was such a weird moment. I've never really been stuck for words, and I'm on the show looking at going, I did actually do that, because it was such a long time ago. I thought I'd probably made it up in my mind that I'd been, you know, did a Blue Peter audition, but they didn't want me. They took Tim Vincent instead. And my agent said to me that I need to go down the gym, get bigger, work out more. What's the other thing? Oh, and I've got to learn to speak better.
Wow.
I'm slurring my vowels.
I saw something on your Instagram where you talked about you were told not to slouch, and then you spent 11 years slouching at Soccer AM.
Oh, God, yeah, because, yeah, so on Soccer AM, Soccer AM was just like, because I used to write it, produce it with all the boys and stuff, and then, and girls, and Helen and everyone, and we used to just arrive on the show, and it was just like my home, because we all worked together, and we worked really long hours, and it was just a great team of people just having such a laugh, and I think that came across on the show, and I think that's why people liked it.
I mean, me and Dave did the audience a few times, and it was such a great day, like, all the guests come up and say hello, like, all you guys come up and say hello. All the people that will be on the scene. It was just, it's like one great big boys and girls club. It was just such a great day out.
We're definitely getting in. Let's get into Soccer AM straight away, Tim. We were going to save it until a little bit later, but let's get into it now. Soccer AM, when you and Helen were on it, was some of the greatest years of mine and Al's life ever. We've spoken about it.
It really is, though, and that's not just brown smoke.
It's really not brown nosing. We weren't the youngest, but we were probably late teens to mid 20s, and you didn't miss it. Like every Saturday, it was something to talk about, something that was that you couldn't miss. And Helen's knowledge, from a sexist point of view. I think she was probably the first that had a football knowledge the way that she had, but being female, it was just unbelievable. She was one of the lads. And like you spoke there about it was family and you had the best laugh doing it. And that literally poured through the screens to all of us on a weekly basis. And mate, look, again, I'm not going to get all brown nosy, but I remember when you left. I remember when you left, and it hasn't been the same since, and that's no injustice to anybody that's done it since, but it hasn't been the same.
It was just the right time, though, right time, right place. And the thing about Helen, which always intrigues me, is like I walked in there and I took a guy with me, Andy, who's no longer with us, sadly, but we'd worked together at the Big Breakfast. And I said, come on, let's go in and do this show. And do you want to come with me? Because at the Big Breakfast, no one really talked about football. It was really, people forget this, but in the 80s and the early 90s, football was so hated by people because of the hooliganism element of it and all that sort of stuff.
It was quite stiff-necked, though, weren't it? People like the pools and watching the results come in on a Saturday afternoon. It was boring. There weren't no life in it at all, was it? It was basically data.
Well, I don't know. We all loved it. I mean, I loved it. I loved playing it and watching it and talking about it with my mates. It was just a bit crap, wasn't it? It was like footballers and pastry girls. It was that sort of image. And Skye came along and started doing that. Anyway, I took my friend Andy over there, and I said, look, there's this woman presenting it called Helen, which they've given us, and it's called Soccer AM. We've got to get rid of the name, and we've got to get rid of Helen. So I've gone in and I said, this is what we're going to do. So we went in, and then we first of all said to the bosses, can we get rid of the name Soccer? And they went, no. I was like, okay, fine. why is it Soccer? He goes, because there was football, a lot of NFL on it as well. So they wanted to make sure that, I don't know, I think some load of Aussies had set it up. And we were like, fine, let's do it. And then I started talking to Helen like week one, and I was like, holy shit, this woman knows more about football than me by miles, by country mile. And also she knows all the lower division. She's a Torquay fan.
Yeah,
Torquay United. Yeah. And then I also realized that she was a much better presenter than me, like miles ahead of the way I presented. And I was like, she's brilliant. She's the best thing ever. And what really bugs me a bit about Skye is when they're celebrating all the women now in football, which I think is a good thing, the original was Helen. She was actually the original, and all the footballers loved her and respected her. The managers did, the fans did, everything. And they should be holding her up. She's still a brilliant presenter. They should be giving her plenty of work. And, and I feel really, really sad that Skye didn't
about that. Because we had Natalie Sawyer on.
Yeah.
And Natalie,
that knowledge.
And we spoke to Nat quite a few times since, and she kind of had a similar sort of opinion, and she didn't want to go into too much detail because obviously she still got ties at Skye, but there was definitely a negative undertone, I'd say, Dave, wouldn't you?
Funny enough, Tim, we spoke about Helen to Natalie as well, and there's something about female knowledge in football. Not only is it, I don't want to come across really sexist and say that it's quite attractive, but when they can hold their own, and in what is always been deemed as a male-dominated industry, presenting anyway, but also as a football presentation, you'd expect it to come from from a male dominant big alpha, to hear them talk about football and to, like you said, to have that knowledge is it's amazing. But I agree with you, Tim.
The other thing
people
you have to
forget
remember
about Helen.
Yeah, and the thing you have to remember about Helen is she presented during the time where all the football managers used to call her love every single week.
Yeah, and darling
if,
and everything like
if
that.
We ever had, like, when we used to have ex-pros on and stuff, she would ask a question, they'd answer me. They wouldn't even look at her. And it's that brilliant, you know, Harry Enfield and Paul Whitehouse sketch, wasn't it, where they're post-match and there's a woman interviewing them and they won't say anything. And they go, where's the man?
Yeah.
We get interviewed by a man. Where's the man? Where's the fella we talked to? And it's just, and she lived through that era and she never once batted an eyelid because she just loved it all and just, you know. And,
but she gave as good as she got as well.
Oh, she did, yeah.
I remember picking up on things like that. I remember her once saying, I think it might have been with Peter Reid that was on. And I think it was not after he'd been sacked by Sunderland. And he was talking, and she went, I am here. And everyone started laughing because I watched it on the archive the other day. She had quite a few situations like that. But I mean, good on her. She was fantastic.
She definitely opened up the way for everybody else.
Yeah, but you can't have a go at those old pros because they just weren't used to it.
No, yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's like sometimes you get the really old school managers on and they were struggling with the idea that a woman was going to interview them. And she got that and she was brilliant with it. And, you know, and then all the younger generation didn't give a damn. You know, when we started getting Rio and Frank and all those guys on and JT and, you know, all those young kids and stuff used to come through on it. They all just loved her. And, you know, they didn't give a shit. They were just answering every question she gave her. It was only the old school because they weren't used to it, you know. So
Talking about Natalie Sawyer, she was one of your babes as well.
She was the last ever soccerette, yeah.
Was she the last ever one?
She was the last ever soccerette.
Was she? I didn't know that.
She spoke about that quite fondly. And look, Tim, I've got to ask you, how did it affect you when you decided to move on? Because, look, I put it up there, mate, with things like Take That splitting up and stuff like that. When Tim Lovejoy left Soccer AM, it was sad times. I must admit, a lot of guys' hearts across the nation.
Because we used to go up the Arsenal. We're both Arsenal. We know you're Chelsea, Tim. But we used to go up the Arsenal most weekends. And we'd get in the pins and you'd watch Soccer. Soccer AM would always be on the big screen.
Mm.
And I remember the big leaving day. And it was the same. I think it was the same day that I think it was around the time Thierry Henry was leaving.
I just did the last show and left. No one knew I'd left.
No, and I remember it was sort of they addressed it like a little bit after, and it was like, well, what's going on here? And I just remember having a big conversation in the pub about it, like, and people debating like who's going to come in, and it just wasn't the same.
There was multiple reasons why I left. One was like I wanted to get the guys. The way Sky Sports was set up was all the guys working with me, Fenners, Sheephead, Robbie, Neil, all that lot. They were all brilliant. They were like Rocket, Tubes. They were all great and they were part of the show. And they were getting paid the same wages that a normal AP would get or a researcher or something at Sky. And they weren't sort of acknowledging the fact that we had created this like little team. Beast here. Mm. And it was like there was a lot of people watching it. It was giving the show good credibility. So I did go and see the bosses and I did say, come on, can we just fund the guys a bit more? And they didn't want to.
You don't tune in on a Saturday to see a runner. Well, if they're going to get paid for it, they should.
And what was happening is they were all sort of getting, you know, they had families and stuff. So they had to start moving on. I thought, if we lose that core, it's going to be me and Helen. I know I can do it again. I don't want to build it again because these guys are so ridiculously talented. Like Fenner's character portrayal and the way he did it all was just unbelievable. Sheephead's dryness of it all, you know, all these guys. And we'd all really, you know, put a lot of effort in. I was just like, can you please just like fund it for us to stay? And then the other thing was, what had happened is people don't realize this, but we'd sort of reinvented the show over 11 years, probably three times. And it was getting a bit tired again. Mm. And we needed to reinvent it. I did a podcast actually with Helen Chamberlain not so long ago. And we sort of did it sort of throughout the time, the history of the time. And there was this really brilliant time where we're getting all the foreigners coming on the show, sort of like your Frank LaBeoufs and stuff. And then you were getting your Rio Ferdinands. And it was a really exciting Robbie Fowlers and, you know, Noel Gallagher was in there. By the end of my time, the clubs had decided no footballers were allowed on the show. So Sir Alex started it, right, with his never let any footballer on it. Then Gerard Houllier said we didn't take football seriously enough. He wouldn't let any Liverpool players come on. Then Arsene Wenger saw those two not letting their players go. Now you don't see footballers on anything. You know, you don't, never see them on a show. Like, so if you're going to tune into Soccer M, you'll see lower division footballers. You'll never see the Premier League. You'll never see the elite on there.
Most of it, it's only when they're out. So if they're injured and they've got gap to fill and things like that, or they're between clubs, right?
So I was doing a football show.
I never realised that.
Yeah, so I was doing a football show with no footballers. So at one stage, we were just speaking to whoever we want, Gazza or whatever. Mm. On the glory days that you're talking about, it was just ram-packed full of footballers. But the Premier League just absolutely... you know, it became so huge that they decided to not let any players on the show anymore. So it became a bit weird in that respect. So there was like a load of reasons building up, and I didn't want to ever produce something which was crap. And so we all decided we would do some other stuff, and that was it. We went off and I do you know what I miss so much about it? You know, asking me what I think, I miss sitting down with the boys and just sitting down and girls actually. But Helen and stuff, we'd sit down, we'd just sit there and we'd go, right, we need some gags, or we need an item, or someone would come up with some crap item. Like, I mean, I always remember table football, and it was a man standing in a furniture shop, and it was so bad that we did it again the next week because we couldn't believe it was that bad. And that's how we sold it. We said, this is the worst item we've ever done. It's so bad. We want to see if it can be as bad as that next week. And I think the viewers loved it. Because they realized how crap so much of the material was. Yeah. But we knew it was crap. There was integrity to it. Like Fixtures Man, which actually turns around to be funny in the end because it's so rubbish. Yeah. We invent his stupid, shitty, like these catchphrases. You know, Tubes' question was just me sitting around the office going, fuck, I've got nothing for Tubes to do. And I didn't want him running around as a test tube baby anymore. So I said, you got one question only. And he just came out and started putting a shirt on and dressing up for it. And it was just, made us laugh.
Mate, it was brilliant.
It was brilliant when he failed as well. That was the best bit. When he fucked up and everyone would just howl him.
But like Skill School. Skill School was like, it was
even that segment, it was meant to be, let's show off our skills. Mm. But they made it funny.
Yeah, they did. Like Jordan Henderson was on it and things like that.
Well,
and
Raheem Sterling as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. What people don't realise as well is, I always say this, and people really, I promise you, people don't believe this, but in 96, when we decided to introduce, it might have been actually 96 or 97, I sort of said to everyone, let's do a thing about skills. And Sola had pulled off this amazing bit of skill, and I was a big fan of his. And so we were like, let's do some skills. And so I said, will people understand what a showboat is? Because it's a boxing term, really, not a football term. But went around the office and asked. And then we started doing showboats each week. And I got called in by my boss saying, some of the managers are not happy with you putting showboats on. Because if we'd just come off the back of the 80s and early 90s, where it was percentage football, no luxury players. You know, Glenn Hoddle was a luxury player. We had to throw him over to France because he was too skillful. You know, it's percentage, and the fans won't like it. We still have to, if you've got a fancy Dan on the pitch, within one or two seasons, players were actually texting us going, done a showboat, stick it on.
Because
the players wanted to do it. And
all aboard the showboat.
I'm not saying that Soccer M changed that, but what I'm saying is the attitude changed whilst we were on it from being
influential, definitely.
Like suddenly there were players, all the foreigners coming over, and they wanted to do skills, and we weren't used to it, you know. Put it in the
but
mix.
I think that's a really good point, Tim. Like during the heyday when you were getting all the players on, and I think even now, if you ask the players that are at the top flight of football, definitely all the English ones will be like, Soccer AM is still, that's still the program to watch. If you get on Soccer AM, you've made it.
Right. Like, well, the players don't go on it, do they anymore?
I bet they do still speak about it.
Yeah, they'll probably all still watch it. Yeah, definitely.
And look, it's a show for them. It is worth saying, Fenage and Jimmy are doing a good job. They're doing a good job. It's probably, that's my favorite pairing since you and Helen stop doing it.
Yeah, and it's a lot harder for them to do it now because there's a lot more
red tape.
More, there's a lot more criticism as well, and there's a lot more legal loopholes to jump through, and you know, things like when we show Third Eyes, we had access to it. Now everyone has access to everything. So you know, you'd tune into Soccer M to see the person fall down the stand, you know. And I remember Match of the Day 2 started doing it. I was like, what, why are you stealing our stuff? And now, but everybody's got, you know, you, as soon as something's happened on a football pitch or in a football stand, it's already online within seconds. And actually the fan stuff is probably as equal and as good as the stuff which is being actually filmed by the TV company. So it's a different beast than it was when I was doing it, definitely.
Do you still see all the guys?
Oh God, Jesus Christ, we try so it's just such
hard,
isn't
it?
If they're listening, they're such knobs, because we try so they'll laugh, because we try so hard to get together, and it's just impossible. Honestly, it's because everyone's got families, everyone's got lives. So I see Robbie a lot, Robbie Knox, you know, and I speak to Joe quite a lot, you know. And speak to Helen, you know, but Helen, I've got a WhatsApp relationship with, like most people, with people, you know, so I speak to, you know, some of them every now and then, but, you know, it's just so hard when you try and get them all together, you know, the expression herding cats, it's just like that. It's ridiculous. So we've all given up, because we keep trying to do it and we've all given up.
Are you still the gaffer, or is Helen still the gaffer?
You have to ask Helen that.
That answers that question there, doesn't it? From both of us, Tim, thanks, because like you probably didn't realise that what it did for the people that were watching.
Yeah, but definitely.
It was such a great time in our lives, and having Soccer AM there, that it was such a laddish thing, but it was great times, mate. It really was. And like Al said, we've both grown up now. I'm 41, Al's 36, and we've got our own kids and our own lives, and we don't get to the football as much as we did, but we remember Soccer AM and things like that, going to the pins and watching it first thing in the morning with a pint in your hand. It's one of the best memories that we have of friendship.
It's really interesting, actually. I've done so many, nearly 300 podcasts. I actually might have done 300 today. That might be my 300th I recorded earlier today. But the one which is got the most listens by miles, and I've interviewed a lot of celebrities, is the one with Helen, because
people want to hear it.
People love
it. It's nostalgic, mate, isn't it? And
some bloke found a VHS the other day in his drawer, and he dug it out, and I don't know how he did it, but he managed to get it online, clips of it online, and I was just sharing them. And it's just magical listening to people, the happiness it brings people, because it was fun days, you know.
It's days as well that will never get back, because the world's changed so much.
Yeah, and football's changed.
You remember what the world was like then as well. I know that we're talking mid to late 90s, but it was a simpler time for all of us. I mean, we were a lot younger. We didn't have the responsibilities that we have now, and we just look back at it with such fond memories. And I'll try not to get like it, but thank you, mate. It was such a great thing.
Football was so good back then, wasn't it? Chelsea.
All of us.
Chelsea were great.
Arsenal were fantastic.
Yeah, you were actually. And you had so many characters in your team. We could just, you know, run through them now. Ian Wright up front, you know, Thierry Henry, Bergkamp. You know, you can just name them all. Winterburn, all that. Like Chelsea had all the foreigners come over.
The squad was incredible.
It was,
the rivalry.
Chelsea and Arsenal, both of us lost our soul. We lost it when the Russian came along. And to begin with, I was like, let's jump on this gravy train. And then suddenly after a while, I'm like, what am I supporting? I'm supporting his yacht. You know, it's like, supporting football is more than just winning.
Yeah.
It's about actually watching your team. Like, I think Arsenal fans are going through a good time at the moment, because you're now at real adversity because of, you know, Spurs are better than you, or they ended up better than you. You're having a tough time. And if you come out at the other end and you end up knocking on the door of winning the league again, you're going to have such a brilliant ride doing that. You Spurs have had such a great ride recently. They had the ride with Pochettino. They've had the ride with Conte, you know.
Whereas Chelsea, stadium, everything like that.
Chelsea, keep buying the bloody league. It's so fucking boring. And then Lampard comes in and he's putting all the young kids through, you know, Tammy, which we've gone and sold, you know, to Roma, but Mason Mount and stuff. And we're like, last we got something to support. them Roman sacks him. And it's like, I mean, I quite like Tuchel, but it's like, Jesus Christ, there's nothing to support here. Because everything, every time you ever like anything, they get rid of it. Stupid, bloody young.
Did you get to go much, Tim?
No, because sort of family took a bit more of it. Do you know what? I used to have two season tickets there and the prices were going up. Mm. My season ticket prices, where my season tickets are now, are so ridiculously priced. And my mate took them on. He said to me, do you want to back in next season now? That he knew I wasn't happy with the Russian. Chelsea fans love him. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt the whole thing was soulless personally. But a lot of Chelsea fans, I think football fans have been told that football is about winning.
Yeah.
And that's all it's about. And so, you know, but as I say, you know, if you're an Arsenal fan, you're digging in now and you come back and start winning cups or getting back into Champions League or something, you're going to have a great run, you know, and that's the exciting thing, I think.
Where does your history of supporting Chelsea come from? Is it generational?
No, my dad supports supports Spurs and Arsenal.
Oh, really?
He just loved football. So,
yeah. Good on him.
Well, mate, I love football. I mean, I am an Arsenal fan at heart, but I do love football. I've been to Stamford Bridge numerous times with my brother-in-law because he's a Chelsea fan.
Why was it a Highbury? There was no. I was thinking about this the other day. It's so weird football now because you look at, you know, you think about the old shed. That roof over the shed was just tiny. We never stood in it because it was like we stood by the tea bar. But Highbury as well, you had that big end and then you had the clock end which there was no roof over that. And it's like, why do people choose to stand there? I mean, at least at Stamford Bridge, there was a reason because...
But I love that. That's what gave it character.
Yeah, you know? It was the heritage as well.
We don't get that in football anymore. I mean, what's Fulham, isn't it? Craven Cottage is the oldest now.
Yeah.
The and they still got the wooden seats as well.
Yeah, have they still got those?
I think they've still got them. Have yeah,
they? But then look, let's talk about terraces coming back, isn't there, Tim?
I took safe terracing. They're actually in grounds now, aren't they? A few of the clubs.
Oh, are yeah, so yeah, leagues,
a few
yeah.
clubs. I was up. My mate took me up to Brentford the other day, and they're doing it really well. He's a Brentford season ticket holder, and it's just right up the road from me. So we cycled up there, and so cool cycling to football along the river. They've created such an amazing thing there. Honestly, that they gave the season tickets. I think my mate paid £400, and kids were 90, and there was like 20 of that. Because it's a new stadium, everything. There's like 20 of them all got together, and they all stand up behind the garden. They don't sit down. They're all their six and sit, and they all move around, chat and stuff. It was like old days football, you know. But they're just so into it was like they played. Who were they playing? Southampton, but the atmosphere in there was amazing. You know, when Arsenal or Chelsea play Southampton, it's not an electric atmosphere, is it?
But it's funny because Natalie Sawyer is a Brentford fan, and she spoke about the atmosphere there, and it's. I don't want to be disrespectful, so anybody out there that's listening, please don't think so. But it's like working class football. Do you know what I mean? They've earned their way to the Premier League and where they are, and they're not going to change who they are. They keep themselves very grounded, and it still has that family affair where the mum, the dad, the kids all go every single week, no matter what, no matter how old they are, and everything like that. And she said she goes with her dad, and I think a lot of us have lost that, Tim. Because of ticket prices, and we support the bigger clubs, and you kind of forget all that.
You can't just sit with your mates. You can't just your mates can't just knock on your door in the morning and go, "Do you want to go up the bridge tonight?" Or you know, "Do you want to go to football?" You can't today. You can't do that anymore. So
we've
lost that. So
we're both near. We both live just. Al lives in Wellington City and I live just outside Wellington City. And I used to go to Stevenage Borough on the year that they were going to be promoted, but they weren't. I was about 13 at the time and used to stand in the shelf there at the terraces. And it was part of that. You used to go knock on each other's door. Should we go up the borough today and watch the borough play? And they'd be like, yeah, £3 to get in. And you'd stand there.
Aren't they all Chelsea fans up your way?
No idea if Spurs or Arsenal, wouldn't they?
Really? So, yeah, we're the suburbs of London supporters out here. So you'll get Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs.
West Ham.
Yeah, West Ham. Mm. But, yeah, you don't get a lot of the Northern teams. You get a very small percentage of Man United fans around here, which is just bizarre.
Yeah, the Southern United.
Yeah. So look, we could talk about football and Soccer AM for probably another 3 or 4 hours, Tim, and proper Brown knows you, but we're predominantly a mental health podcast. We talk to people within the industry and people we respect about their struggles and things that they've faced in their own personal lives with mental health. How is your mental health? And do you want to talk us through some experiences you've had with mental health?
Well, it's no secret that I had depression quite severely a few times. Interestingly, that it was kind of after leaving Soccer AM was when the first time it got really bad. And then I had another bout of it. And interestingly, spent a lot of time going to see therapists. I was one of those guys who decided to read my way out of it and go and see a shrinks and read. And hence why I started my podcast, actually, because I'd read so many self-help books. I decided that I'd start. I started off doing agony uncle stuff because I was like, I can answer everyone's problems. I know it. But what really pissed me off but now I look back at it, what was bad, but not bad. That's all right. You've got to be so careful with the language.
No. You don't hear. We know what you mean.
But you do have to, you do, because, you know, it's my experience isn't the same as anybody else's experience. I got frustrated because I kept meeting therapists and they kept saying, look, here's a coping method or here's a mechanism, here's a way of dealing with it. And then one day I met a shrink who said to me, you got depression. Oh, cool. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Let's work out what's going on. And I said, what do you mean it's a good thing? He goes, it means you're broken. So now we need to fix it because it's your body and your mind and everything telling you your life is broken. Now we have to take it all apart and work out what it is that you're doing. And so in my experience, coping mechanisms weren't helping me. What helped me was going, why the hell do I think this way? And why am I feeling this way? And what am I doing? And, you know, all these. And so then starts this huge journey of, God, I hate using that word. It's like I'm an X Factor contestant. But this starts this like huge journey of like.
I know what you mean, though. I talk about my mental health podcast, and you do sometimes think like it's a one man sob story. And you think people are not buying this shit. But I just think just if it's how you feel, just say how you feel. Like,
Al, it's probably worth us explaining to Tim where we both currently sit or where we've.
With mental health.
Yeah. So, Tim, I lost my father when I was 10. So my mental health is very grief related. I'm good at talking about grief and facing grief and stuff like that. Al's journey is very different, and you can probably connect with Al more on the depression side of it. Because that's more of Al's journey.
It's definitely, and then just hearing you talk then about therapists as well, it's I went through so many, just not trying to find an answer. And every time they come up with one, I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, I don't get what you're saying. And I had a similar thing with a guy that I went to see, and he was like, yeah, cool. Don't worry about it. And I was like, what do you mean? Don't worry about it. I'm here for you to tell me to like sort it out. And he's like, yeah, we'll get to that. But for now, just don't worry about it. You've got it. It's in you. He said, look out the window. And I looked out the window. He said, see these people walking past. It was on Harley Street. And he said, that person's got it. That person hasn't. What do you see that's different? I was like, nothing. So exactly. So let's talk it through. And it's definitely with therapists, once you get one, like you're going to tell us, it just clicks, it resonates, and you can work your way through it slowly and surely.
Well, I ended up just going, but when he started talking, I was like, okay, let's look at this. So I started looking into a lot of sort of Buddhism and stuff. I'm not a Buddhist, but I looked at that. And I looked at a lot of Stoicism, and I started reading philosophy. And people have been doing this shit for thousands of years. And it's the same answers always, the simplification of life, the acceptance. Right. You've got to accept where you're at and what's happening. And a lot of people really struggle with that. And then one of the great things I think you need to do is take responsibility for your life. You know, you need to be responsible for what is happening, whatever it is, whatever happens, take responsibility for it, because then you own your own life. You know, it's yours. You're in control of it. And I think the lack of control really adds to some of the
struggles.
Struggles, yeah. And then so as you grow, I feel you get more wisdom. So one of the things that I've been, I think it's the Stoics who say, desire what you have, not what you don't have. And just a little simple thing like that can completely change your life. Because if you're sitting there going, they've all got better shit than me, then you can actually look at yourself and go, I always say one of the great things about jealousy, which a lot of us have, struggle to contain it. But if you want Jeff Bezos's money, you can't just cherry pick the money. You've got to have his face as well.
Yeah.
And you've got his stupid personality. You can't, you've got to have all that. You've got to have the ex-wife. You've got to have clearly he's going through a weird time at the moment because he's beefing himself up. So he's looking to gain some status in a physical way. Yeah. I think
he's got a masculinity complex.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. So you've got to take that with it. So when you desire what you have, and I think one of the greatest lessons I've ever had is get your values sorted, first of all, which is why I struggle with football, because it doesn't fit my values. And I realize this a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, get your values. What do you stand for? Who are you? Even that basic thing of what is it that you believe in? Do you believe in empathy and being kind and, you're a wheeler dealer, want to rip everybody off and all that sort of stuff. If that's you, that's fine. That's your values. But my values are, I have my values, and every time that I feel remotely shit, I go back to my values, which is my base, and my whole life is based on my value set. So I can wake up every day and I can desire me. Sounds really wanky, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. It's cliche, but it's
actually clarity, isn't it?
It's finding yourself. When people say, I find myself, finding yourself is not a case of you've got to literally go and backpack around Asia or go in a tree and hug it and drive a Prius. Like, that's not finding yourself. It's like you're saying, finding your core values. We're really good friends with Andy King, who's on the podcast she was on. Andy's a very good mate of ours. And we listened to that. And I remember you talking about the fridge and the stuff you put on your fridge.
Yeah.
That was quite interesting.
Yeah. The death chart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a death chart on my fridge. It's to constantly remind myself that, if you think about death every time you remember to live, because it's going to all end one day. And my brother died early when he was in his 30s of pancreatic cancer. He's 37. And so I've got a relationship with death, quite a close one. And rather than hate it, I think it's always a great reminder that, if you're doing something crap, if you're doing this podcast, you two, and you're really not enjoying it, what's the point? And also, if you're always like, I want the latest, what do people want these days?
iPhones, yeah.
I want a Tesla or a BMW or something. If you like looking at a car, but you're never going to be lying on your
Dave's got a Tesla.
Have you?
Yeah.
Good cars.
I heard sorry.
No, I, sorry, I, yeah. I don't, I'm not saying you shouldn't have one. I'm just saying, if that is your be all and end all, you want this or Porsche or whatever, you're not going to lie on your deathbed, right? And ever, you're never going to contemplate the fact that you had a Tesla. What you will do is think about Al and your relationship with him and whether that was worthwhile or not, and whether you put enough effort into that. And I think that I think that's where we're going with this. And
it's all about clarity, Tim. I know I can kind of scrape it back in other directions, but like what you just said, it is the clarity behind everything. How bad did things get?
Really bad. I mean, I was bedridden for a while, that sort of thing. And I was doing TV shows at the time. And what's so strange about it is I was on something for the weekend and I'd get up, get my lazy ass out of bed and I'd do the show and I'd crawl back to my house on a Sunday and I'd sort of go back to bed and feel absolutely crap again. And I just couldn't work out life or what was going on. Mm. But I didn't tell many people because I was scared I'd lose my job. And one of the things which has changed is, I'm not scared of talking about it on my podcast and stuff. And I don't think I'll lose my job. Whereas for years, I just wouldn't talk about it because I just thought people will think I'm the lunatic. And so they just won't want to renew my contract. So, I was functioning a lot.
Did you mask it? Put on a mask?
Yeah, I think most people, I never did the drug thing. And I think it's just, it was a tiny little, for a month I did and I didn't like it.
Antidepressants.
If I'm truthful with you, they get an
We hear that quite often.
Yeah.
It's very personal. Yeah. Antidepressants. Some people like it. Some people don't.
It's very split. I mean, I still take citalopram and have done for, and I, I will eventually at some point probably try and wean myself off them, but it works for me. So
this is why I always say it's hard to talk about these things, because everyone has different experiences. I went to the doctors and said, look, I haven't slept for days sometimes. Mm. And he just gave me a load of sleeping pills. And then later on, I saw someone else, a specialist, and they went, hey, here, have some drugs. And I took them and I read the side effects of them. I felt crap, by the way. I remember like being out and thinking, I just don't feel very, it just, nothing feels very real. Reality shifted, but in not in a good way. And I realize now that my reality does shift sometimes. And that's when I can feel my depression coming on, but I know how to deal with it now, or what it means now, which is more important.
Is it like out of body experience, Tim?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mm.
Well, somebody just... else has said that, Al, and I can't think who that is.
Josh Myers, the actor.
But I think like sitting outside watching yourself go through every day.
Mm. Yeah, you definitely don't feel part of society. You're watching things happen around you, and it's all very strange, I think, and everything feels very dark.
Did you become quite self-aware? Like, did you like conscious of what you were saying, doing, speaking, acting, walking, that kind of stuff? Or
the reality for me was I couldn't listen to music, couldn't watch TV, I could read, and then after all that stopped as well. Everything was painful.
Wow.
When I talk about pain, because I've done this on my podcast a lot, is talk about people when they've brought up depression, I've talked about it being painful. And it's funny because it is a pain, but it's not a physical pain.
No.
But it really bloody hurts.
Yeah.
You know, and anyone who's had depression will know what that means. You sort of, you wake up every day and go, oh my God, it just hurts so much. Everything,
can't see it.
Yeah. And then you'll be going along your day and then there'll be a bit of music. And it'll just throw you boof. Mm. And I've spoken to a load of guys on my podcast from Special Forces, and they talk about PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what a lot of people, I'm not saying I had PTSD because I've never fought in the army or anything, but it's that thing where you go and you get taken straight back to.
But that is possible because you don't need to be in the services to have PTSD. Your PTSD could be linked to
you could have PTSD
an emotional
from leaving
state. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Do you find, Tim, that you're quite self-critical?
I don't know because I don't know what everybody else is like. There's a lot of that built up in my personality. But I think we're just, the answer to that is probably yes.
Mm.
But I think like the more I think, I talk to a lot of people about free will and how much free will we actually have, because it seems to me we can do very little in our bodies, right? So I'm going to get just deep for 30 seconds here.
Go for it, mate. I love it.
A bit too deep. But there's very little we do. Like you can't make your liver work. It's working automatically. You know, you can't switch on any of your senses or switch them off. You can't turn your hearing off. You know, you don't even know what your next thought's going to be. It's coming from somewhere else. And you're the sort of PR guy for all this. And that's what happens.
Mm.
But deep down inside you, in your unconscious, you have like in my mind, you have like a computer, like the hardware of your computer, and it's been taken stuff in all through its life, all through its childhood and everything else, and you've sucked it all in. And that's when you get to an age sometime in your life where like none of this shit's working, and it's breaking down. And that's when I think you have to reteach yourself. So when you say, are you self-critical? Yes, I have been, and I'm trying not to be. It's like the big thing for me is I hate losing. And now I try my hardest to lose everything to try and make it like, this doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, yeah. Normality.
Normalize it, yeah.
Look the shit out of me when you know it all the time when athletes are on TV and they go, oh, he's an athlete, so he's not a very good loser. It's like, what? So the rest of us are, you know, everybody else.
yeah,
we all fucking love losing. Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. I love it.
That's what makes you brilliant, because you lose, we win, yeah.
And they're like, oh, they hate losing. Yeah, we all bloody hate losing. That's not part of life. So, yeah, well, it's part of life. That's the thing, yeah.
So for me, does your... I mean, again, and I don't want to blow smoke up your ass and things like that, but I wonder if for you, you don't realize how important you are to people.
Mm.
Do you carry regret with you and things like that for your with your career, professional career?
No regrets at all. I love what I've done. I can't believe it. Mm. I mean, I think Sunday Brunch has been great. Something for the weekend's been
mate,
good.
I've got to say, you're over 10 years on Sunday Brunch. That's worth saying. That's worth congratulating, mate. It's a great show. Well done. You and Simon Rimmer do fantastic things.
It is a great show. And it's also worth saying that it's very helps me quite a lot because when you start having a drink at 11 in the morning, I turn to my wife and go, I'm having a beer. They're having a drink.
If Tim can do it, I'm going to do it.
I love those because you look so happy, the pair of you. It's like you finally get your drink.
Yeah, that's the thing about TV is you enjoy yourself. The difference between when you say, do you know, what did you say? Do you know what you mean?
Do you know how important you are to people? Yeah, so like when we've spoken and we've gone through the whole dick sucking thing about Soccer AM, like you're really important to us. Like I have a tendency to just say what I mean, Tim. So please excuse me, but you're really important.
But I used to be the boss of Soccer AM when I did it. I used to have to read the mail and I'll be truthful with you. It was pretty much brilliant. Mm. But every now and then, so I've been for 26, 27 years, I've been reading people tell me I'm a wanker.
Right.
And so it's, you kind of just, if I have to accept that a lot.
Yeah.
If I have to accept the good stuff, I've got to accept the bad stuff. So I just sort of think, right, everybody watching me on TV is watching the bloke on TV. I'm somebody else. I'm me, and I don't want that. I went to one of these charity things at like a financial company in Citi in the bank, and you do some trading for the day. And I remember this is a real poignant moment in my life. I turn up. It's like who's the celebrities there. It's brilliant. It's amazing the amount of great celebrities they had. But there was a gladiator there, stood there, and gladiators hadn't been on TV for years. And he stood there with his big cotton bud. I can't remember which one it was. I don't know. But I remember looking at him thinking, oh, mate, give it up. Fucking hell. You know, that's
it was bound to be Hunter. It was bound to be Hunter.
Got wolf with it.
But you've got to go, you know, you've got to give that stuff up. And it's like you
clinging on.
You don't want your TV career to you don't want your TV career to define you. You want to be, you know, I'm going to talk about myself in the third person here, but I want to be Tim Lovejoy, the dad, the friend, the whatever. And then there's another Tim who's the guy on TV, you know, who's like, I don't want to just be that guy. So I see that happening. But if it all gets taken away from me tomorrow, I don't think I'm going to be the guy who's going to go, oh God, you know, the one who goes into the papers and goes, oh, why won't they employ me anymore? It's like, shit, I had a great time. And it's like, you know, so I'm just enjoying every moment I can get doing at the moment.
That's a great way to look at it, pal.
Yeah,
and that must help the mental health. And can I just talk about your brother James just for 2 minutes? Because I think it would be disrespectful if we didn't, because like I've said to you, my journey is quite grief related. I have some workplace depression as well, but it's quite grief related. And so let's talk about James. Like you said, you lost your brother to pancreatic cancer. Just take us through it, Tim. I don't really know where to start with that. I don't have a brother. I have three sisters. So to lose a brother as young as he was, I lost my dad when my dad was only 46 and I was 10 years old. So my grief journey is long. I'm 30 years into my grief journey, but I have an understanding of losing people too early, too soon as well. So just talk us through the experience that you had with James, your brother, and losing him.
Well, it was horrific, really. You're living in a horror movie. He had some stomach problems. Doctors said you got more chance of winning the lottery than something being wrong with you. Went for some tests. They said you got pancreatic cancer. Look it up. I mean, when I heard he got cancer, I was like, holy shit. And you know, that was a horrific moment for my family and me. And then when you look up pancreatic cancer, you realize it's kind of fatal. There's not a cure for it. So you realize you've only got a matter of time. And then you watch someone with anyone who knows about, who's been around people with cancer will know that the brain is, unless it's brain cancer, I suppose, but the brain is still functional. And the body is deteriorating. And that's the most horrific thing to watch someone do that. And then towards the end, it was all very quick. I mean, the whole, I can't really remember now. I think it was about 8 months from the diagnosis to the, to his death. It was all very, it was all very sudden. I was there when he died, which I always thought was horrific until I spoke to someone about death on, sorry to keep talking about my podcast, but on my podcast. And then she pointed out how beautiful death is. We're all going to go through it at some stage and you can see some beauty. And I was like, I'm glad I was there. She said, it's a privilege to be there to see him die. So I feel much more comfort in that. And there is a bit, there is some beauty in death, you know, I suppose. And then you have to, afterwards, there's the bit where you're suddenly an only child because there was only my brother and myself, and suddenly the dynamic changes dramatically. And it's like, it's a really strange thing when you lose.
That's a really weird statement to make. And I'll just give you a very quick story with related to that. You say that you're as an only child, that it made you an only child. So I lost my grandmother 2 years ago to COVID. She was like 89, had good innings, and she had dementia and other health problems. So the COVID was the probably the quick way out, and probably the more dignified way out. And I don't say that publicly because it'll upset my family, but I have a tendency to think, Tim, that was the best way out for her. And funny enough, my mum's father died when I was 17. So it basically meant that my mum had lost both of her parents. And my mum's got three brothers. And one of my mum's brothers said to her, does that make us an orphan now? And I don't think anything could have been clearer if you said it, but it's just the realism behind that is just, I don't know if that hurts more. Do you know what I mean? It's a weird one, isn't it? So, like you said, that you become
an only child,
An only child. But well, she's like, "Well, I'm an orphan now."
I didn't take any time off soccer. I just carried on working all the way through. Because it was my like sanctuary, really. It was my happy place.
Yeah, happy
to.
Space. Yeah.
So I'd just keep on doing that, and then it was. I'd had a problem. I split up with my wife, and that happened just soon after as well. We split up, so there was all that came on top. And that's when the first depression hit. But I realized now that I'd had it for longer. But people don't tell you, men. They don't tell men about anxiety and stuff.
No.
So you didn't. I never realized that I had anxiety, but I did, and I didn't understand it was until I read Matthew Haig's book. I can't remember what it's called now, about staying alive or something. It's called Reasons to Stay Alive. I read it, and he described what anxiety was. And I'm like, oh shit, I had that loads. You know, it's like, I didn't know what that was. So then that's when it all happened. But you know what? I'm not unhappy about people might hate me for saying this, but I'm not unhappy about the depression now because it's taken me on a completely different route. I've learned so much. I do so much reading about I've learned so much about life, and I see life in such a different way. So also my brother's death, it's horrible, though it's made me realize that, as I said before, you know, if you think about death regularly, it allows you to live, because one day, you know, if you're moaning away about, I don't know, whatever, the grass has got to be cut or something, I don't know. You can put it in perspective when you start going, shit, I'm going to be dead one day, especially if people invite you to something you don't want to do. No, that's the thing about my death chart, which everybody thinks I'm nuts with, by the way. So I've got a chart. And on it is all the months of I've been alive, all in red dots. And then it's got the estimated life expectancy when I was born. And it's got the life expectancy now. So it's gone up a bit since I've been born. The life expectancy has gone up.
And winning.
Yeah. But I am getting closer and closer. When you look at it, I'm getting closer to the original date that I should die, which is probably in my 60s or something. And then now the average is sort of in your 70s. And I think it's late 70s or something. I'll go and check it.
But, well, how old are you now, Tim? You're only like 35, aren't you?
Yeah, something like that, 54. So I put like a little dot in, but it's one that weird thing. Sometimes people say, do you want to do this? And you look at the chart and go, nah. I'm not wasting a red dot on that shit. I'm telling you what, I'm not. And it does channel you a bit more. Because
again, it it's strangely enough, it's clarity, isn't it?
And it is still clarity, yeah.
The older you get, the ability to say no to shit you don't want to do is actually your God-given right. Like,
and you get thrill out of it as well.
It's weird. Like, me and Al go out for drinks and some of our friends will come with us and they'll be like, oh, do you want to go on somewhere else? Yeah. And me and him are like, no, don't. I want to go home.
By midnight.
Do you know, there's a great book by Sam Harris called Lying. It's only a short little book. And he says in it, all he talks about is it's actually more about telling the truth than not lying. But he questions Father Christmas with the kids. He questions all sorts of different things. But the general consensus of it is if you tell the truth, your life will be better. It'll be more fitting and happier. So it's a great example of this. My mate was going to go, me and my mate, there's three of us who are sort of mates, you know, and we've connected through something. And one of them went to us, oh, I'm getting married. I want to go on a stag weekend. And I went to my mate, I'm not going to that. Like, that just can be asked. And so I wrote him on the text message. I said, mate, I really don't want to spend a weekend getting pissed up with a load of blokes. I'm sorry, I'm not coming. My mate had also texted him going, yeah, all right, because he couldn't. Neither of us wanted to do it, but I did. And my mate, the one who I said to him, I didn't want to go. He just texted back going, fair enough, I get it. Because the truth, like, because we all know, right? There's times in your life where you can't be asked to go and get pissed for a weekend with a load of lads. You know?
Yeah. We've had the stag do conversation. Not that long ago.
Yeah, I literally went on a lad's holiday and I'm only 36. So it's not like I'm, no disrespect him, 54.
he thinks but I'm old at 41, Tim. So
I went to the lads do and it was Tenerife and it was with a mate of mine who's about 41, another pal who's like 38. And
long
they just
weekend,
were, they're on different waves. They were like, they're wanting to stay out till 3-4 in the morning. Lads. And I'm like, mate, I'm here for like away from the wife and kids just to sit in the sun, read a book, chill out, go out for a nice meal, maybe have a couple of drinks, watch football, go to bed. And they're up, they're wanting to go out and get on it. And I'm like, fucking hell, like, we're not 18 anymore. Like,
escapism.
I flew home early. I flew home 2 days early.
Really? So some bloke I know, he's going on a stag week to Rio and he doesn't really want to go. I'm like, why the hell are you doing that?
And he goes,
a week to Rio. He's married with a kid and everything.
Mate, that's not Scunthorpe like, Friday to Monday, is it?
Yeah, Rio. Like, no, that is not a stag weekend. That is a lad's holiday to fucking Rio. That is mental. How have they've scaled up so much stags now, haven't they? They're just, they're insane.
Yeah, they level up all the time. I remember my sister's fella when he got married, he said, where are we going? We're going to go to Thailand 2 weeks. He said, oh, we fucked. Like, I'm not going to Phuket for 2 weeks. I'm not getting away with it. I'll die. Right. Ain't gonna happen.
So Tim, look, while we've still got you, it's only fair that we talk about being a dad. Al, let's give you a bit of scope. Al has a son. I have two daughters. Now, from doing my research, you have three girls.
Yeah.
So let's talk about being a dad. How do you find that, especially with three girls? I get grief for having two girls, I'll be honest. And, like, how are you going to deal with boys? And obviously being a boy myself, I know the way that boys are as well.
You're not a boy, are you? You're a boy.
I'm not. I'm aged before my time, Tim, if I'm honest. But one of my daughters is about to go to secondary school and she's going to an only girl secondary school. So I've had a bit of grief about that. So
do you want my pearls of wisdom? My twins are 20 and my little one's 9. And
wow.
Yeah, so there's two different relationships and there's a big gap in between. I always used to get embarrassed about that as well, but you know, like that thing. But it seems to be very en vogue at the moment, doesn't it? To have
enjoy it.
You start knocking out kids when you're in your 40s, why not?
But it doesn't really
interactive.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter as long as you're a good parent, I suppose.
Exactly.
I think having the age gap has been fantastic because for my youngest one, I think I'm a much better dad the second time around because I realized some stuff. I know it's another cliche, but every time you do something with your children, it could be the last time you ever do that. So I really missed changing nappies of my twins. I know that sounds weird, but now that's all
I can completely understand
bonding
that.
Time. So I love changing my little one's Jamie's nappy when she was a baby. And One of the things that there's an Italian, I think it's an Italian proverb or something. When they're young, give them milk. When they're older, give them trust. And that's how I've led it with the twins. They're both at university. I have no idea what they're doing. It's their lives, not mine. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, I don't care what you're doing as long as it's your decisions. And as long as someone else is influencing you, it's up to you. It's your life. It's not my life. And I think I did hear one of my daughters once, which I was quite proud of, telling one of my friends, my dad kind of lets us do what we want. So we never really do anything. You know, he goes, I remember phoning him from King's Cross once, you know, and he was just like, oh, cool, what you're doing. And it's like, you know, it's they were quite young at the time and they just found out that they could just get anywhere on the tube. But underneath, it was like the swan thing. Underneath, I'm going, holy shit, why are they doing that? But I let them do that. And the biggest lesson I've ever learned with kids is the,
From Cubs.
Oh, okay. That's
perfect,
so
perfect timing.
Did he get his knot badge, tying knots badge?
I don't know. Have you got any badges yet?
It's probably graffiti badge now or joint rolling badge and things like
that. Come here. Tell Tim, have you had your knots badge yet?
What?
Have you had your knots badge?
What's
knots? What's
knots? Have you learned to tie string?
What did you do today at Cubs?
I didn't know how to tie string.
What did you do at Cubs?
Well, we play frisbee, then we had to think about like a prayer, like a thing to
Times have changed, Tim.
Yeah. They played frisbee.
Cool. And then after that, we played this thing where we had to fire bucket, and then someone got like a measuring cup, they had to pour it into like a tube that would go into the other cup, that mean tub. And then they just put down that tube, which I was holding, into a bucket, which I had to push, like, hold.
Exciting times from Connor Casey.
Feel free to call it a night.
You got to love that excitement from him.
Oh, mate. Yeah. He's brilliant.
Yeah, the one thing about what I realize is it's kids just don't give a shit about how long you're with them or anything else. All they want is your attention.
Yeah,
and as I, you know, when I take my little one to swimming lessons now, I watch all the other mums and dads, and I'm not criticizing them because everyone's working hard and everything else. And
I
know what you're going to say as well.
Go on, they're on their.
You're going to say they're on their fucking phones, right?
I am absolutely addicted to my phone. But when I watch my daughter swim, I sit at the end of her lane. Completely. Every time she looks up and I do her gymnastics. And
I give her this. Every time she does a length, I make sure that I'm giving her the thumbs up so she knows that I'm watching.
And that's gold dust to them. And I think that goes for life, actually. If you value something, show attention. And this is the problem with life is I'm really struggling to show shit attention because my sodding phone, I've got a real problem with it. And I think we all have. But I'm really open to the fact that my phone fucking winds me up. I've non-stop on it, like looking at
sorry for contacting you through your phone, Tim.
But it has its advantages like that. You contacted me via a social media, said you found it's doing a podcast. I was like, yeah, sure. So there's some sort of really good sides to it as well, you know. But Jesus Christ, you know, it's a lack of attention out there, you know. And you know, so
it's becoming the norm, isn't it, mate? Which for me is scary. I take so I work away during the week. Funny enough, I've only come back today. So we live just outside of Wellingarn City in Hertfordshire, and I work in Stoke-on-Trent for a few days a week just because I've got a project going on. But I try and make sure that when I come home, they have 100% of my time.
That's it.
I get the privilege of talking to people like you, sir, but I have to do things like I have to do all the baths. I have to do all the reading.
It's
just important.
And it's not a job. Like some parents look at it like it's a graft or it's a job.
I've got
to put me in innings in. I enjoy doing it.
Yeah, like, I love every minute of it. And like when they can get up in the morning and they see that I'm still here.
Yeah, that's great.
They say like, oh, can I make you a coffee, Dad? Oh, are you working from home today, Dad? And stuff like that. And they look forward to Fridays, Tim, because I work from home on a Friday and I'm doing my admin on a Friday. And they look forward to the fact that they'll come back from school at 3:15 and I'm here. Hmm. And they'll be like, oh, wicked, that's the start of the weekend sort of thing. I love it.
I wasn't a terrible dad with my twins, but I definitely wasn't as focused and didn't show them as much attention.
You know more about the world now.
Yeah, I do.
But also you're talking like it's over. And it's not, it's just begun. Because at 20 years old, those girls will probably realise that they
money.
I wasn't going to say that, but they'll need their dad more than ever. Because look,
they need me when they need guarantors and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like I think of things like when they get their hearts broken and stuff like that. I mean, like, I don't know about you, pal, but I wasn't the nicest of guys growing up to women in my life, including my mum. And
no, I was always brilliant. I was always
smooth operator.
Dave was like the modern day Amber Heard.
I was a right Prince Charming. I was everyone's favorite boyfriend.
But I love the fact that At some point, my girls will need their dad. And if that's that I've got to stand ground on someone that's broken their heart, or if I need to lend them 50 quid to get home from King's Cross, that's fine with me. I'm more than happy to be there and be willing to pay with the Uber account or whatever they need.
I do look at things a bit differently sometimes. I always think, like, when my kids were puking up on me, I was always like, this is the best bit. And they were like, people say, why do you think that? And I say, because it's the bit where they really need you.
You know, to be needed is important.
To go and play with them in the park with a ball or something, and, you know, teach them how to throw a ball or ride a bike or something. Yeah, that's good. But actually, when they really need you, when they're being really sick and ill, and you're sitting there going, and that's when they really are.
You're the superhero, mate.
They reach out to their parent and you feel great that you can be there for them, you know?
I know exactly what you mean about that. It sounds such a weird thing to say, but I kind of love it when my kid's ill, because you get those moments. Like, he's off school today. All right, well, I'm going to pre-plan my day. I'm not going to go and do that today. I'm going to stay at home with him. You just lay in bed all day watching films. You don't get those days.
You can be the hero, mate. You can be the hero. And it's an ego boost for all of us, but also the fact that we're needed, it's the most soul pleasing thing ever in the world, isn't it, when your kids need you? Great. I mean, Tim, even when they're 20 years old and they phone you up and be like, dad, can you spot me 50 quid? Like, mate, I kind of look forward, in a sick way, I look forward to all of that.
Yeah, that is weird. I've got to be honest. I think you're going to...
I'm putting money aside now, ready for the day. Yeah.
Well, look, Tim, listen, what can we say? Thank you so much for coming on.
I've really enjoyed it. It's been a great chat.
You've opened up really great, and we really, really appreciate it, mate.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And look, we'd love to take you out for a beer and out for dinner. So when mate, we can go wherever you want. Like,
We'll take you where we took Andy.
Yeah, we could do German Gymnasium down at King's Cross, because that's easy for us. But look, when your schedule's less busy...
We took Andy King out for dinner. German Gymnasium.
Everybody's favourite best friend, Andy King.
Have you met him in person?
No, only via the...
Funny enough, I think he's over soon now.
He's over in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I spoke to him the other week.
Look, when your schedule's a bit less busy, reach out, and we're happily obliged to take you out to dinner. Say thank you, because to us, mate, you're an iconic status, and it's been so fantastic talking to you, Tim.
Lovely to meet you as well.
And much love to the family and everything like that, and we wish you all the best.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, mate.
Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tim Lovejoy.
Favourite episode?
No one else can see me, but I can't stop smiling. I love Tim. I love everything about him. So, Mr. Lovejoy, thank you very much. Sir Lovejoy, thank you very much for coming on and giving up your time for the podcast. He was brilliant.
He was better than what I thought. But no, it's not. That's a lie, because I listened to his podcast. And obviously, I've listened to him on other podcasts and heard him talk about mental health. And he speaks about it so well. People resonate with it as well, really, 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 really well.
And he mentioned his podcast a few times during ours, and it's only worth we give it a shout out. So it's Dear Lovejoy. Go out and have a listen. Tim was brilliant, very receptive to us and what we wanted to do, and 100%. Answered all of our questions. And yeah, he was just brilliant. So thank you very much, Tim.
Top man. Right, should we get into it?
Let's do it.
Hold up. Wait a minute. Something ain't right.
Ah, boy, here we go.
Oh, no, 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 no. Ha ha ha!
I'm on my way. It's me again. I'm going to go straight in with the headline. This is a special one. Okay. Right, the headline. Sheep sentenced to 3 years in jail after being convicted of killing a woman.
What?
Right. Okay. Go ahead. Nice and short this week.
Good.
A sheep has been sentenced to jail for 3 years after it was found guilty of killing a woman. The ram was taken into police custody in South Sudan early this month after it attacked a Daehu Chapin, 45. She later died as a result of her injuries.
That's not funny, but it's not funny at all.
It's not funny, but it's the fact that the sheep has been convicted of murder and sentenced to 3 years.
Right. I just killed the sheep.
The ram attacked her by hitting her ribs, and the old woman died immediately. So this is what happened in Rumbek East, in a place called Akuru Yol, Major Eli Marble said, right?
Right.
Our role as police is to provide safety to Our role as police is to provide safety and separate fights, right? The ram was apprehended and currently under custody at a police station of Mailing Akpor Payam.
Okay.
Right.
Well done.
That's a place, obviously. Yeah. Right. Major Marber explained why the ram was arrested for its actions. The owner is innocent and the ram is the one who perpetrated the crime, so it deserves to be arrested. Then later on, the case shall be forwarded to the customary court.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I'm a bit in awe of Tim Lovejoy.
Go on.
Where the case can be handed amicably. The ram will now spend the next 3 years in a military camp in Abdul County headquarters in Sudan's Lake States. It is unknown if the animal has expressed remorse for the crime. I won't go into any more details.
I'll tell you what, mate, that is so bad.
He's definitely been fleeced. Definitely.
Yeah, gotcha. But do you think he's out now?
I don't know. 3 years, possibly.
Do you think he's re
for good behaviour?
Do you think he's reoffended?
I think he's been put in prison and all of a sudden they've been sending mutton kebabs for the next 3 months. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think he was he became a top boy in prison?
Yeah, strutting around in his fur coat.
See, it'd be like the daddy. I'm the daddy.
Mate, have you ever heard of anything so crazy that they've put a sheep in prison in Sudan?
Well, yes, I have. I've heard things on this podcast. That's why we do
it. I mean, that's why we find them. But I just can't believe that it went through a court case as well to find the sheep guilty and sentenced it to 3 years.
That's insane.
It's mad, isn't it?
Oh, God.
But anyway, look, that's the story for this week.
A good story.
It's a long episode. We had a fantastic time with Tim. So, look, thank you to Tim for coming on. Thanks for giving up his time. Thank you for being so open and honest. Thanks to you, pal. And thank you to everybody that listened. Stay safe. Love each other. Hold hands. Kiss each other. All of that malarkey. And we'll see you all again soon.
Boom. See you next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
One final thing. My wife loves you, but...
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
If you've been affected by any of the subjects on today's episodes, please know there is help out there.
That's right, Al. Not only can you speak to your friends and your loved ones, but you can also reach out to the great people at Better too.
Better is a charity raising awareness around mental health and suicide prevention. Better intends to increase understanding and reduce fears around the topics of mental health and suicide in order to conquer the stigma surrounding these incredibly important yet understanding issues.
So we want to introduce you to Shout. Shout 85258 is a free confidential text messaging support service for anyone in the UK who is struggling to cope. As a digital service, it's available to anyone of any age at any time, day or night, 24/7. It is silent to use and does not show up on your phone bills.
And if that doesn't work for you, reach out to the guys at Better at better.org.uk. Remember, guys, there is always someone out there who will listen, and it's okay not to be okay.
Stay safe, everyone.
Big love.